Now let's go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by. He is Gary Leach, as I mentioned, is the director of the Center for International Studies and the Department of Political Science at Cape Breton University in Nova Scotia, Canada. And as an independent journalist and author, his research is focused upon the global struggle for social justice and on the U.S. intervention in Colombia under the War on Drugs and the War on Terror. He has published extensively on this, and in fact, he was one of the founding editors of the Columbia Journal with over 350 scholarly articles. He's written 7 books, his most recent is Capitalism, a Structural Genocide, which takes an honest look at how contemporary capitalism's inherent and fundamental structure generates inequality and violence and increased human suffering and death. His website is Gary Leach, LEECH.com. Nice to have you with us today, Gary.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
Gary, I'm like a lot of people in this audience. I'm concerned when we think of the term genocide, we immediately think of the Nazis and the Holocaust, Pol Pot, Stalin, Pinochet, Mao, and other despotic national leaders who murdered tens of thousands and millions of their citizens. And that's usually how international laws perceive it. However, perhaps we need to broaden or redefine our understanding of the long-term genocide consequences in this age of globalization and the free reign of unregulated free trade capitalism on the global economy. Now, in your analysis, capitalism kills, quote, about 10 million people around the world annually. Therefore, since the time of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton's World Trade Organization agreements, like NAFTA and TRIPS, went into effect, and Obama now trying with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we're looking at approximately 150 million victims from the capitalist system. 150 million. So first, based upon existing international laws, should we broaden our definition of genocide? And then second, you write about capitalism's, quote, structural violence that intentionally inflicts on any group or collectivity conditions of life that bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. And then that capitalism's, quote, genocidal intent is implicit in the facts. It is not necessarily premeditated. So provide us with the rationale for how violence and genocide are then inherent in the very structure of capitalism's theory and practice.
As you mentioned, the idea of the book is to expand the definition of genocide. There has been an increase in recent years in scholars and legal experts to include structural violence. That means those people who are dying around the world due to these social structures that dominate in the globe, such as people who have lack of access to medicines because of the poverty they exist in, and that people who are dying from preventable and treatable diseases but can't access medicines because of the societal structures. And as you pointed out, when we talk of genocide, we think of those specific cases, the Nazis, Pol Pot, Stalin. And they're easy to identify the primary individuals responsible for the mass deaths in those cases. And the problem with the capitalist, the argument I'm making that capitalism constitutes a structural genocide, is I'm arguing it's not necessarily the people who are in charge of the capitalist system, whether it's economic elites or governments. It's the logic of the system itself, that structural violence is inherent in capitalism, and the structural violence results in death on such a scale, as you said, pointed out. I've claimed at least 10 million people a year die unnecessarily from capitalist structures. So therefore, the system itself is structurally genocidal. Now, my argument is that the logic of capitalism, it's an economic system that's rooted in profit-making. Its logic is to accumulate more capital, generate profits, accumulate more capital, and expand. Therefore, the logic of production in a capitalist society is to produce for profit, not produce for human need, whether people need housing, whether they have insufficient food, whether they have insufficient health care. That's not the driving logic. For example, in Europe, they spend $11 billion a year on ice cream. Now, that's $2 billion more then is required to provide safe drinking water and sanitation to everyone in the global south. But the logic of capital produces ice cream because people in Europe have the disposable income to purchase ice cream, so there's profit in that, whereas people in the global south don't have the money to purchase safe drinking water, so that is not a viable market. So as a result, we have a system that results in tens of millions every year dying as a result of these structures. And therefore, I would argue that the internal logic of capitalism is inherently genocidal.
Okay. Now I understand where you're coming from on that. Share with us the violent nature inherent in NAFTA and its consequences upon Mexicans.
Yeah, NAFTA is a great example of what's going on globally in microcosm, because the free trade doctrine that applies in NAFTA, as you mentioned the WTO earlier, is being applied globally in many parts of the world. Now, NAFTA, under NAFTA, the U.S. has flooded Mexico with agricultural exports. Now, in the United States, we massively subsidize our agribusinesses, so that these exports can now under NAFTA can flow into Mexico, and the small Mexican farmer can no longer produce and compete with the price that U.S. corn sells for in Mexico, and not just corn, but also wheat and rice and many other staples. And so therefore, they're put out of business. And again, this is the logic of the system. It serves the interests of capital, not the small farmer, the corporate capital. And so U.S. agribusinesses now dominate Mexico. The 430% more of the market is now dominated, Mexican market is now dominated by U.S. agribusiness corporations. Since in the first decade of NAFTA, more than 2 million Mexican farmers were forced out of farming. So they've lost their livelihoods. And the only reason they couldn't compete was because they're not subsidized to the degree that the U.S. agribusinesses are. Now, the logic of capital is that these now become a surplus labor force for the new manufacturing jobs. So in Detroit and everywhere else, we lose our decent paid manufacturing jobs, which now move to Mexico. And instead of paying an order worker $30 an hour, whatever they're earning, we can now pay $1.70 an hour in Mexico to assemble the cars and electronics and everything else. And these 2 million farmers who have been forced off the land now become the wage laborers for these new factories. The only problem is NAFTA, at its height in 2000, had created 700,000 manufacturing jobs, nowhere near enough to provide work for the 2 million displaced farmers. And moreover, by 2003, half of those 700,000 jobs had moved off again to China. So you've got this massive population that is desperate to find an economic means of subsistence. And it's no coincidence that drug war violence and the drug trade has escalated in the era of NAFTA in Mexico, as the free trade, the amount of trade going across the border has made it easy to smuggle cocaine. You've got desperately poor Mexicans who are vulnerable and becoming engaged in the drug trade. And the other consequence has been the so-called immigration problem. In 1994, when NAFTA was implemented, there were only 4.8 million Mexican-born people in the United States. Within 5 years of NAFTA, that had almost doubled to 9 million, because as we displaced these 2 million farmers and they couldn't find jobs in Mexico, they did the next logical thing. Let's go across the border to the U.S. to find a way to survive. And now, after creating conditions that have ruined the livelihoods of millions of farmers, we now want to build a wall across the border to make sure that they don't come here to find a way to survive. And so, you know, these are all intrinsically linked. And the logic of the system is to create favorable conditions for corporate capital. And so our agribusinesses expand their markets, they create a cheap labor force at the same time they displace farmers in Mexico and other countries, and their profit ratios skyrocket, our our stock market indexes skyrocket. This is what we've seen, corporate profits and stock market indexes going through the roof for the last 20, 30 years, on generally the general trajectory. And corporations, investors have done really well. But for the average manufacturing worker in the United States and other countries, wealthy nations, those jobs have gone overseas. They're now working for $10 an hour in Walmart or call centers instead of in factories. And in Mexico and other countries in the global south, people who had subsistence lifestyles, who were poor by our standards, but once they've lose their access to land and they become unemployed and there's not enough jobs for them, now they become really poor. And many of them try to immigrate to countries like the United States, Canada, and Europe to find a way to survive.
When you throw in the international banks that provide us with an example of capitalism's genocidal structure and how they operate, and then the hedge funds and the equity partnerships, and then multinational corporations like Monsanto that create Terminator seeds that you can only plant once, and then go after anyone that tries to plant a seed twice. And yet historically, all the seeds that are grown in one season, a certain percentage are kept aside. If you grow tomatoes, you'll keep a certain amount of tomato seeds aside. That becomes your stock for the next year. And now they don't want that to happen. So now we see the footprint everywhere around the world of banks, governmental agencies, both their own and complicit with Washington, our State Department, backed up by our international intelligence agencies that are willing to use the full force and power of the United States military to get our products, our services, our banks, our profits out of their countries. Wouldn't you think that the mainstream media would see this and someone would report on this? And yet, I haven't seen those stories.
No, exactly. This is, a lot of these issues are not touched on by the mainstream media, and then there's numerous reasons for that. I mean, one, most of the mainstream media are owned by corporations who have vested interest in the existing system. So rarely do you see the mainstream media challenging the fundamental structures of the existing global capitalist system. And the other reason, of course, is that our media, our so-called professional media, journalists, are overly dependent on official sources. So whenever anything happens anywhere in the world or with the economy, the first place they run to is the government, to get the government spokesperson. And in order to be quote-unquote objective, they get a Democrat's perspective, they get a Republican's perspective, and there you go, we've covered both sides, when essentially the Democrats and Republicans both advocate and support the existing free market capitalist model. So alternative views get marginalized. And the case you were talking, and the examples you were giving around Terminator seeds with Monsanto and Cargo and these other companies, they've proved devastating for peasants around the world, farmers around the world, Latin America, Africa, Asia. For example, in India, and one of the case studies in my book, I look at India, and India has had its markets pried open and has been forced to accept Terminator seeds, patented seeds in cotton, in other food seeds. And what happens is these farmers then get convinced to purchase the seeds, and along with them the chemical pesticides and fertilizers required by those seeds. And they have to borrow money to purchase them. And they've been told that your yields will increase to such a degree that paying off those loans will be no problem and you'll be better off. Whereas before, they used to engage in, as you pointed out, seed saving. Seeds were viewed as a commons, that everyone owned them. And you'd save them and you'd plant them next year. But these new seeds, as you said, terminated seeds, they're good for one season. The plants grow. They don't produce new seeds that can be replanted. So the yields have not been what the Monsantos of the world said they would be. So in India, for example, now you've got tens of thousands of farmers who are in debt, and they have no choice but to borrow more money to buy new seeds to try and earn more money again each year, this spiral, to earn money to keep paying, trying to pay off the debts as best they can. They can't go back to the old subsistence farming because these chemicals have poisoned the earth It takes 3 to 5 years for soil to regenerate after it's been dosed with chemicals like that. So they have to have these chemicals to grow crops. And they need a cash crop for export to pay off their loans. And so this has become such a crisis in India now that many Indian farmers are so buried in debt that they've started committing suicide, many by drinking the pesticides from Monsanto and the corporations.
More than 280,000, according to Dr. Vandana Shiva. Over a quarter million people died. We're out of time. Thank you very much, Gary Leach, for coming on. Is Capitalism a Structural Genocide? The website is Gary, G-A-R-R-Y, Leach, L-E-E-C-H.com. All the best to you.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening.